The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday, everybody, or as I like to refer to it, is a Friday Eve. Something weird's going on because by this time, oh, there you are. Okay, everybody, come on in. I looked over and the YouTube chat room is virtually empty. I mean, there's a couple of you there. But by now, people have usually made the journey over from the Randy Rhoads Show to the Nicole Sandler Show on YouTube. And okay, come on in. Come on in. I'm back today. So maybe it's because I wasn't here yesterday. So I told you yesterday I was taking the day off to spend it with my kid because, you know, we needed a day together. It had been a while since we did. And we're still celebrating because I got a big anniversary coming up next week. Well, there's an anniversary and then there's also my the final 5-year clean cancer diagnosis thing. So, you know, we're celebrating. And I'll explain some of the other celebrations next week when we get there. But okay, here you go. Come on in. Come on in. The water is fine. The water at the beach yesterday was rough. You would have thought there was a hurricane out in the Atlantic or something. And actually, there isn't right now. I mean, there are a few storms brewing, but it doesn't look like anything is threatening us directly here in South Florida for a change. But there are three swirling icons out in the Atlantic out there. And I don't know if that's what whipped up all the wind and the surf yesterday. I did take a dip in the ocean. And I sat out on the beach for a while and breathed in that the beach air, and it was very relaxing. We had a wonderful day. So I'm back. You know, I don't often take a day off, but I did. I prepared a special show to run on the audio streams yesterday. And for some reason, Progressive Voices, there's gremlins in the machinery, I think, because it ran a show that's been playing every weekend for the last few weeks. So I will get with George and figure out what's going on there. So this weekend there'll be fresh shows because Progressive Voices does run this program on weekends on both Saturday and Sunday, I think like 2 hours each day. So you can always catch up there or just go to NicoleSandler.com, pick a day, listen to a podcast. There is no paywall. So, you know, enjoy. All right. I'm stalling. Can you tell I'm stalling? Because I don't want to talk about what happened today. But this morning I was struggling to get my What's News report done. And the longer I struggled, the more news kept breaking. And unfortunately, the news broke. Reports of an explosion at the airport in Kabul. So, you know, for a while, all we knew was there was an explosion. It was outside of the airport, outside one of the entries. Now, they had been warning us, the authorities, intelligence, had been warning us that there was, there were threats. They said in no uncertain terms yesterday, get away from the airport. Get away. Go. Leave. And many people heeded the warnings, but many didn't. And now we know that at least 12 U.S. service members died. At least 12 American soldiers were killed and in this explosion. In fact, you know what? There was a Pentagon briefing just a little while ago. I pulled a couple of clips from it. So let me just share these with you very quickly. Because the general here can explain what happened certainly better than I can. Here we go.
As you know, two suicide bombers assessed to have been ISIS fighters detonated in the vicinity of the Abbey Gate at Hamad Karzai International Airport and in the vicinity of the Baron Hotel, which is immediately adjacent. The attack on the Abbey Gate was followed by a number of ISIS gunmen who opened fire on civilians and military forces. At this time, we know that 12 U.S. service members have been killed in the attack, and 15 more service members have been injured. A number of Afghan civilians were also killed.
Oh, okay. So that was one. So 12 were killed. Then he talked about a number of civilians were also taken in. Here's the next clip.
Thank you, General McKenzie. Lita Baldor with AP. Thank you for taking the time to do this. Can you give us your assessment of the ISIS threat going forward? What are you seeing on the ground now? Does this cut the evacuation short, do you believe? And are people able to get onto the airport now? And then finally, the president has warned that any attacks against the U.S. would be answered. Will this attack be answered militarily by
will
the U.S.?
It? Oh, please, no.
So a number of questions there. Let me try to take them in order. So first of all, the threat from ISIS is extremely real. We've been talking about this for several days. We saw it actually manifest itself here in the last few hours with an actual attack. We believe it is their desire to continue those attacks, and we expect those attacks to continue. And we're doing everything we can to be prepared for those attacks. That includes reaching out to the Taliban, who are actually providing the outer security cordon around the airfield, to make sure they know what we expect them to do to protect us. And we will continue to coordinate with them as they go forward. We are continuing to bring people onto the airfield. We just brought a number of buses aboard the airfield over the last couple of 3 hours. So we continue to process. We'll continue to flow people out. The plan is designed to operate while under stress and under attack, and we will continue to do that. We will coordinate very carefully to make sure that it's safe for American citizens to come to the airfield. If it's not, we'll tell them to hold, and then we'll work other ways to try to get them to the airfield. But I think our mission remains. We're still committed to flowing people out up until we terminate operations at some point, towards the end of the month. But I think we have the ability actually to do all of those things as we go forward. Let me just come back one moment. And you talked about going after ISIS. Yes, okay. If we can find who's associated with this, we will go after them. We've been clear all along that we're going to retain the right to operate against ISIS in Afghanistan. And we are working very hard right now to determine attribution, to determine who is associated with this cowardly attack. And we're prepared to take action against them 24/7.
Okay, so that was General McKenzie. He's CENTCOM. I guess he's the commander in charge there in Afghanistan, obviously speaking to the press at the Pentagon via video hookup. Couple of things to keep in mind here, though. ISIS-K has claimed responsibility for this attack. Remember, think back a few years. In 2019, the former guy said ISIS was, quote, 100% defeated. And of course, the Republicans and a lot of the media went along with that. Not true. The other thing to keep in mind is that ISIS and the Taliban are not friends. They don't work together. So ISIS is saying, we're going to find the culprits and we're going to take care of this. And in fact, John Harwood reported a little while ago and tweeted out, General McKenzie says some earlier potential attacks on U.S. troops have been thwarted by the Taliban. Go figure. So meanwhile, what happened is this is really, really sad. This is the largest. Where do I have it written down? I don't want to get it wrong. The deadliest day for U.S. troops in Afghanistan since, of course, I cut off my comment here, in like 10 years, since I believe 2011. And now I can't remember where I pulled that. And I started writing my notes and I must have gotten distracted because, hello, I have adult ADD. But, the deadliest day for American troops in Afghanistan in probably a decade. It's terrible. What he said was the general there, Marine Corps General Kenneth F. McKenzie, said two suicide bombers assessed to have been ISIS fighters detonated near Kabul's airport. The explosions were followed by, quote, a number of ISIS gunmen who opened fire on civilians and military forces. There were also a number of Afghan civilians who were killed and injured. BBC is reporting the death toll is already at 60. This is tragic. Tragic. But again, I will continue saying war sucks. People die. And whether it's a war that's just starting or in full swing or it's ending, people die. People get killed. And that's what's happened here. You know, the sooner we get out of there, the better. I'm glad we're leaving. It's going to be ugly. The remainder of the withdrawal will be everything about it is ugly. I don't know what, you know, what people expected. And now there's just some, I mean, I'm going through Twitter and just shaking my head. Brett Baer from Fox. You know, I just said this. I said that today is the deadliest day for U.S. troops in Afghanistan since August 5th, 2011. But Brett Baer tweeted this out and almost sounds celebratory about it. He wrote, according to DOD data, today is the deadliest hostile day for U.S. troops since an August 5th, 2011 helicopter attack, making this day the, when I say the, it's because he capitalized it, the deadliest attack in more than a decade. Okay, the problem I'm having is that these idiots on the right keep, it seemingly are, you know, cavilling over this, that they're happy about it because, ooh, this happened on Biden's watch. It's horrific, but so is war. And again, whether you're going in or coming out, it's ugly. And we still have some time left and more people to get out. In fact, the numbers, you know, the other day we were talking about how they don't know exactly how many Americans are in Afghanistan because it's temporary. When you go visit another country, it's on you. It's up to you to tell the American embassy that you're there. So they're aware that they have citizens in that country should anything happen. But it's voluntary. And by the same token, when you leave, you're supposed to let them know you're leaving. But if they don't, there's no way that the embassy would know. So they had been answering honestly when asked how many Americans remain in Afghanistan. We don't know. But I guess because they've been asked so many times, now they're taking a stab at it. So authorities are now saying about 1,500 American citizens remain in Afghanistan. But I'll tell you, they don't know. They really don't know. But, you know, then there's things like this. Marsha Blackburn, who is one of the more reprehensible members of the Senate, Marsha Blackburn tweeted out, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Antony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, and General Milley should all resign or face impeachment and removal from office. Why? Really? Why? Why? What did they do? They didn't get us into this war. They didn't keep us there for decades. All this administration did was keep their promise to get us out. This taking sides, this placing blame, this is all bullshit. This is ridiculous. And yes, they're crowing about it. They're happy about it, it seems. And that is really sickening. Just so sickening. Speaking of sickening, all right, I'm going to move on because there's really not a whole lot more to say. Situation in Afghanistan sucks. And frankly, it's not going to get any better. I was going to say until we leave, but it's just not going to get any better for who knows. But think back to when was Afghanistan good? It wasn't like this smoothly operating nation of happy citizens before we went in. It's always been this way. And it was stupid of George W. Bush to think we could go in and, you know, whip them into shape. We built infrastructure in Afghanistan to the tune of how many billions, if not trillions of dollars? All for nothing. And I'm sorry if you know somebody or loved somebody who got killed over there. There was no reason for us to be there. Or as you heard Lucas Kuntz say the other day when he was on the show, he's running for the Senate from Missouri. He is an Iraq and Afghanistan three-time veteran. And he said, we should have been out of there within 2 years after we went in the first place. He said this outcome was inevitable. And more people, you know, who are honest are coming forward to say this stuff. And I, for one, certainly appreciate it. Now, honesty is not a thing that the Republicans seem to know. And, you know, I've had this, it's like an audio meme. I've had this meme of opposite world going for a while. And actually, opposite world, the whole idea of it started during the George W. Bush administration, because he said things that just simply were not true, that made no sense, that were just, what? You know, he'd make shit up. Although, if you want to look at, you know, the levels of mendacity, Bush didn't even come close to Trump. He is the world-class liar. I mean, he beats everyone at that game. But, you know, this idea of opposite world, where they are just living in an alternate reality, it just keeps getting more and more real, it seems, with each year.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
It's horrible. It's horrible. 12 American service members are dead. They thought they were coming home. Countless Afghans, we don't know what the civilian count was, but it's not good. And you've got idiots like Marsha Blackburn and her ilk doing this, calling people out. By the way, here's a report from CNN. This is a guy named Nick Robertson.
That readout that we have from the Taliban, part of their statement also goes on to say, as well as noting the number of casualties, as you say, 13 dead, 52 wounded. We don't know the nationalities, but the Taliban do say that this happened in a civilian area. They use that language. It happened in a civilian area. But they also say that this was an area where U.S. forces operated as well. And their statement goes on to say, and this is a bit where I think we need to really take note about how things proceed forward from here. They say that they will take every measure to catch the culprits.
Huh. The Taliban say they will take every measure to catch the culprits. I don't think you can trust the Taliban. At this point, you know, they just need to get as many people out as they possibly can. By the way, we have now crossed 100,000 people removed from Afghanistan. Here, where are these latest notes? From August 25th, yesterday at 3 a.m. to this morning at 3 a.m., a total of approximately 13,400 people were evacuated from Afghanistan. 17 military flights evacuated 5,100 people from Kabul. In addition, 74 coalition aircraft evacuated about 8,300 people. But here's the big number. Since August 14th, 12 days ago, the U.S. has evacuated and facilitated the evacuation of approximately 95,700 people. Since the end of July, that number is 101,300 people. So this is the most successful airlift evacuation from a war zone I think that's ever been taken on. Yet these idiots on the right, who put their own personal job prospects above the Constitution, above the nation, above all else, they're almost gleeful. Ooh, people died. Let's call on them to resign. Ridiculous. By the way, people were warned. I told you on Tuesday already they were telling you to get out of the airport. Yesterday, European leaders warned the airport was no longer safe. A British official said there had been, quote, very, very credible reporting of an imminent attack there. So, you know, they knew this was coming and they tried to warn people. By the way, one of the big problems, if you want to point fingers and place blame, remember Stephen Miller, that creepy thing that worked for Donald Trump, influencing his immigration policy and more. He spent 4 years pushing restrictive immigration policies, and he was instrumental in slowing down the processing of special immigrant visas, specifically for Afghan interpreters, embassy staff, and others who are now targets for Taliban retaliation. This comes according to refugee advocates and from people who worked for Stephen Miller. And for them to turn around and say, you need to fire Biden and Harris and they all need to resign, nonsense. Stop it with this. This is just nuts. And I got to tell you, CNN has been one of the worst. You know, in this house, we flip around channels. David happens to like CNN more than MSNBC, although that's not saying a whole lot. But somebody, I wonder if I'm going to be able to find this now. Somebody tweeted something about, well, let me see if I can find it. Hold on, because I just, I'm getting a whole bunch of responses to it. Now I can't find it, of course. Okay, here. Eric Schmelzer tweeted, wow, Phil Mudd on CNN making a forceful case to Jake Tapper that there was no clean, good way to get out of this war. To which I responded, it's about time someone on CNN did that. So, again, I'm not saying all is right with the world. This is a horrible, untenable situation. But better we get out now than wait, what, another 5 years? Lindsey Graham is saying we need to send troops back in and take the airport and take the vicinity around the airport. No, we don't. No, we don't. We ended this war. A war we should have ended 18 years ago, if we even should have gone in the first place. But we have another war we're fighting right now. And sadly, you know, again, there's a group of Americans doing their best to make sure we don't win this war. And you and I are the ones who are at risk of getting killed. And the war is, of course, against this virus that we can't see, we can't touch, we can't smell, but it's everywhere, and it's getting worse. And here in Florida, we have this idiot occupying the governor's mansion. His given name is Ron DeSantis, but he has earned the nickname Moron Death Sentence because that's what he's pushing. So let me give you the latest statistics from here in Florida. Ready for this? Today in Florida, 901 new deaths. And the largest single-day increase in pandemic history, 78% of them in the last 2 weeks. Now, today he held two news conferences. In neither one of these news conferences did he mention anything about this. He also didn't say one word about prevention. All he did was focus on treatment. What is it, Regeneron that he's pushing? Now, he pushed back on the idea that his biggest donor is a big shareholder in the company that makes Regeneron. It happens to be true, but, you know, it may not have had any influence on this. But there's a reason, isn't there, that this guy has given up on prevention. He's talking like he just wants everyone to get it. And then thinks that will lead to herd immunity. The problem with that is we have learned that even because you've been infected once doesn't mean you won't get infected again. And yet they keep spreading these lies about, you know, the vaccine and what it does to you. It's a vaccine. Can you imagine if you didn't, you know, if we didn't have vaccines for polio and smallpox and measles and on and on and on? But guess what we do? Go figure. So Joe Biden goes on the Fox last night. And, you know, again, you heard the opposite world clip. I'm not going to play it again. But Ron DeSantis lives right in the middle of opposite world. I can't believe the shit that comes out of this man's mouth. Ready yet? I guess I can. I can't believe he's the governor of Florida. hopefully not for too much longer.
He's standing up against his failed policies at the border, his failed policies. You know, he said he was going to end COVID.
He hasn't done that.
We are the first state to start the treatment centers for monoclonal antibodies, having great success with that. That should have been a bigger plan, a bigger part of this whole response throughout the country from the beginning. But at the end of the day, I think he's trying to find a way to distract from the failures of his presidency.
Oh,
and so he thinks that he can attack Florida. Sometimes he attacks Texas because we're Republican states. But I can tell you that dog's not going to hunt down here. Florida parents want to be able to make decisions.
No, Florida parents don't want to be able to make decisions. Somebody, hold on, someone's calling. Just a minute, caller. Florida parents do want to be able to say, we're not playing that game. You cannot... You can't say no masks allowed and not push vaccines. It's opposite world. It's just opposite world. This man is a danger. He's a danger to Floridians. It's scary. Okay, 406 area code. Hi, who's this?
It's Dan. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, Dan.
What's up? I don't know if you listened to Blue Gal, her last podcast. She has a great theory on why Trump was doing what he was doing in Afghanistan, you know, selling out, surrendering, and not letting the Afghans be involved.
Yeah.
Her theory is Trump wanted to get that last shot at a Nobel Peace Prize nomination, and he would gaslight this thing as being, I brought peace to Afghanistan.
Oh, my God.
And he couldn't stand it that Obama had had, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize. And I just want to give Blue Gal credit. I think she's 100% correct on that. I don't know how we fact find it, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's no way you can prove it because, you know, Trump, who knows what goes on in that thing that he calls a brain. But Blue Gal, who is Fran, and Driftglass hosts the Professional Left podcast. So that's where you heard this, yes?
Yep, and giving them credit for it, I think it was excellent. Love
awesome.
Your show.
All right, thank you so much. Thanks, Dan. Nice to meet you. Thanks for calling. Bye.
Right.
I want to do one other thing. I got to share something with you. This, you know, in addition to everything else going on, there is the January 6th investigation, and now, you know, the panel, the select committee, has put out. Requests. I don't think they're actual subpoenas. They've asked for information from a lot of the people around Trump. It's the first step, not necessarily a whatchamacallit, not necessarily a subpoena yet, though I guess they will get there if they need to. But Trevor Noah and the gang at The Daily Show took out a full page ad. It's like the back page of one of the sections of the New York Times. Now, I don't get the New York Times, but somebody tweeted it out. Check this out. All right, I just put it up on the screen for those of you who can see it. And unfortunately, my eyes are not that great. So let me see if I can enlarge this and read it to you. It says, did you do an insurrection? Then you need our protection. I should do a mock radio ad for them. Trevor Noah and Associates and Sons, Patriot Attorneys. So it's Trevor Noah and Associates and Sons, 1-85-OOPS-JAN-6. That's their phone number. Storm our law offices today. It's just, you know, I guess they're trying to make light of a shitty situation, but it's funny. And they spent good money on that. I love these kind of things. You know, who's really good at that is John Oliver. They do shit like this all the time. All right. So, it is Thursday today and Howie Klein is here. He'll be along in just a moment. Today we have a special guest joining us. And I think she's been on the program before, actually, but that's okay because we don't have any rule against repeat appearances. And she's running for the U.S. Senate from North Carolina. Erica Smith is going to join us. You know, Howie used to, the Blue America PAC that he runs along with Digby and John Amato from Crooks and Liars used to really only deal with congressional races. That's where they put their efforts. But now I've noticed they're really getting into a lot of a lot of Senate races. And that's a good thing because we really need to take back the Senate. You know, the Senate is it's very precarious. Well, I'll talk to Howie about it. Let's get Howie on the line. Whose turn is it to mix up the Dirty Debbies today? I always forget to ask at the beginning of the show. Would you get going on them, please?
The National Corporation, hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole Sandler. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you today?
You know, fairly well.
Things are
going well, but I have a crew here working in my attic, so there are four people running around in hazmat suits.
Oh, God.
So, you know, in and out and in and out and noise. There's machines going, like, for 8 hours.
Uh-huh.
You know, it makes it hard for me to do anything.
Oh, I don't know how. I mean, when that happens, I need to get out of the house because it's, I hope you can keep your sanity about you. I have a hard time when they're working here, especially when they're out in the yard, like right outside my window.
But, well, the machines are right outside where my office is. So there's a quarter of an inch of glass between me or less between me and the machines that are making a lot of noise. I don't know if you hear them. But most of them are upstairs in the attic right on top of me.
Oh, boy. Oh, you're fun. Sounds like you need to get out of there. But after the show. So I'm looking, and Erica's not here yet. She's going to join us via Zoom, so I'll keep an eye out there. But is there a special reason? I just got an email from you last night, and you said, hey, can Erica Smith join us tomorrow? I said, sure. But is there a special reason that you wanted her today, or do you want to just tell us a little about her before she comes on?
Both. So I invited her to come on and join us today because she's doing an interesting promotion, which Blue America is supporting, which is for every dollar that gets donated, she is guaranteeing that she will knock on a door in a Trump county. So basically these rural counties in North Carolina that went for Trump, she'll knock on someone's door and talk to them about the election and why they should vote for her. She's running for the U.S. Senate for an open seat. Richard Burr is retiring.
Right.
Trump has endorsed a very, very right-wing congressman named Ted Budd, who's out of his mind. But the horrible governor former governor of North Carolina is running, too. And there's a whole bunch of other crackpots. There's no good Republican running. And there's only one good Democrat running, and that is Erica Smith, a former state senator, three-term state senator, who made a very, very good good job while she did a very good job while she was in the state Senate. And the other two candidates are just sort of garden variety Democrats who don't mean anything or stand for anything. There's a lot of those.
Always.
A lot of people complaining now because of Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin holding up the Democratic agenda. But then they don't realize that that's Val Demings. And that's the two candidates who are trying to run in North Carolina, aside from Erica. And there are people like that all over the country, you know, with these really awful Democrats who are just garbage, absolute garbage. And people don't understand. They understand now about Kyrsten Sinema. They laughed when I warned them about Kyrsten Sinema years ago.
Yep, they did.
But, you know... Now they want to vote for Val Demings. I guarantee you, mark my words, we will be complaining about Val Demings in the future if she wins. She's nothing. She's awful. She's been a member of Congress. Can you tell me one thing that she's done in Congress?
Well,
she's
She was an impeachment manager, which is what how people got to know
her.
Right, exactly.
Pelosi gave her that, quote, job. It's not a job. Her staff wrote notes for her to read, some of which she read well, some of which she read poorly.
Uh-huh.
And she had no role in anything. She did nothing. She was a talking head on TV.
Yeah. No, and she's writing it. And, you know, I don't get it. We, you know, there's Val Demings and there's Alan Grayson is running, and there was somebody else running for the Senate seat too. Oh, Val Demings is running for governor, right? She's
No. Val Demings is running for the Senate.
Okay, I get mixed up, and I'm here in Florida. So
Alan is the other. Alan Grayson is the progressive candidate. She's the nothing. She's a New Dem. She joined the New Dems. She is a New Dem. She stands for everything shit about the Democratic Party. If you have any complaints about the Democratic Party, think of Val Demings.
Oy.
Think of the people who are running against Erica. Think of the jerks in Wisconsin who are running for the Senate. You know, these are all the people that Chuck Schumer picked the same way that he picked Kyrsten Sinema.
Yep.
He picked her because she was the worst member of the House. He didn't pick her despite that. He picked her because of that. Is Erica here yet?
Yeah, she is here. So let's bring in Erica Smith. Erica is running for the U.S. Senate from North Carolina. Erica, I think you've been here before, haven't you? Welcome back to the show.
Yes. Yes. You had me on earlier when we first launched back in March. And so we're just excited to be coming back to join you today.
Well, it's awesome to have you back here. And Howie told us a little bit about what you're about to do. You're going to embark on a door knocking trip around the state. I think this is a great idea.
Absolutely. This is huge. Okay. So I am checking in with you today from the road. We are in the finishing up our 100 counties and 100 days tour. And as we've been traveling all 100 counties in North Carolina, we are meeting folks on the ground and they're really excited that we're taking an interest in every community in this state. We are not sitting on the sidelines or in some windowless basement making phone calls to donors. We make our phone calls, but we're also prioritizing direct voter engagement, which is what Georgia did. And so now that we're wrapping up our 100 counties and 100 days, we are starting our dollar door knock campaign. And that means for every dollar that is donated to this campaign in the month of August, we are going to knock on a door in a county that Trump won in 2020. And so if we get $1, we'll knock one door, $5, five doors, $20, 20 doors.
Wow.
And we are going to reach out to folks all over this state, build the electorate that we need to flip blue in 22.
I love that idea. It's a great idea because the best thing that you can do as a candidate is get out and shake hands and look people in the eye so that they know who you are and know that they can trust you.
Yes,
right?
Including in these rural districts where Democrats don't normally do much campaigning and just write them off. Democrats will, you know, stick to Charlotte and, you know, just Greensboro, just the big cities and do their campaigning there and just leave these rural counties to the Republicans. Well, guess what? Erica represented a rural part of Northeast North Carolina when she was in the state Senate, and she grew up on a dirt road, and she knows rural voters, and she is not leaving them out. I mean, she's also campaigning in Charlotte, but she is absolutely going after these rural voters who have been just neglected, completely neglected by the Democratic Party. And I have a question for you. When you knock on a door in these rural counties, what do you talk with them about? What do you say to them?
Absolutely. So we think it's robbery to try to want to represent folks and know nothing about their community, know nothing about their struggles. So we already have a leg up in that. I didn't come from wealth. I come from hard work. And so I know how to message with rural voters because I'm the only candidate who's lived in, grew up in, represented and organized in the rural part of the state. Those voters are so important. And if we're ever going to expand the U.S. Senate, we've got to start winning seats in the South. And North Carolina is very much like Georgia. The conversations that we're having when we're meeting folks on the ground is about how we know the economy is rigged. And they are tired of working for $7.25 an hour. Yeah. They can barely make ends meet. Folks are talking about the need for health care. For us, that's Medicare for all. And people are really, really concerned when we're on the coast and the rural parts about clean air, clean water, sea level rising. We need to take climate action.
Without a doubt. You know, North Carolina is a weird situation, but there's some of this in every state, it seems. Gerrymandering is a very important character in the story of North Carolina, because the way these districts are drawn, you have some very progressive areas, Asheville coming to mind, yet they have sliced and diced Asheville. So you get Mark Meadows representing one of the most progressive areas, certainly in North Carolina, in on
now
the East
Madison
Coast.
Cawthorn, even worse.
Say that. Oh, and now they've got Madison Cawthorn. This is... Do people get why Madison Cawthorn is now representing that district? Do they understand?
And you raise a critical point, Nicole. North Carolina has a big problem with gerrymandering. In 2016, the courts knocked down the state house and the state senate districts because they were racial gerrymanders. In 2018, those maps were partisan gerrymanders. And the congressional maps are so rigged and so gerrymandered that they have divided historically Black college, university campus. North Carolina A&T had students on one side of campus voting in one congressional district and the other side in the other congressional district. And so we know that that's going to be a problem. You know, fortunately, it doesn't affect the U.S. Senate race because they can't draw me out of the district, but they certainly tried to. When I was a state senator, and I was the only Democrat who was elected that represents a 100% rural district in the North Carolina Senate off of the 2016 and 2018 gerrymandered districts. So it's really, really key, excuse me, and important that we get those rural voters so we can expand the electorate.
You know, and pardon me, and you may not even know the answer to this. It's something I need to find out. You said gerrymandering doesn't really affect you in that in the Senate, you're running statewide. But does it go county by county, or is it decided by the popular vote? Or is it like counties determine?
No, it's just
it's popular vote. Because our elections are so upside down and weird. We do need total election reform. The Electoral College has got to go, because in that scenario, you know, we've seen it to the Democrats many times. They win the popular vote, yet they lose the Electoral College and lose the White House. And that's not how a democracy works.
And the good news is that Erica is not one of these mealy-mouthed Democrats who's going to sit back and just do whatever the leadership tells her to do, not by a long shot. That's not what she did in the state Senate. It's not what she plans to do in the U.S. Senate. She's, you know, very, very outspoken, for example, talking about ending the filibuster. And you don't see that in a lot of Democratic candidates. They'd rather just sort of walk the line and not say anything in fear of angering anyone. Well, that isn't the way that Erica handles it. She is campaigning on, among other things, ending the filibuster so that she can help move the Democratic agenda. And how does that go over when you tell people about it, Erica?
We lost Erica. There you are. Okay. We're having fun with video here.
See, and so this is why I'm fighting so hard for universal broadband. We need that in North Carolina. That's what people are struggling with. And so people know that I'm unbought and unbossed, and I believe in prioritizing people. And in order to advance the people's agenda, we need to end the Jim Crow filibuster. It has been used as a relic to deny so many communities from civil rights, LGBTQ rights, voting rights, and it's being used now because of the historic turnout that we had in the November 2020 election. And so, hands down, we need to make sure that we can pass the For the People Act, but we also need to protect the right to vote. We need to give people access to the ballot, and we need to prioritize people and not corporations in Washington, D.C. It's time for the average American and the working class to be supported with a bold agenda that's going to help them stop barely surviving and actually be able to thrive. Our country should work for all of us, not just the wealthy and the well-connected.
Well, of course. You know, just yesterday, was it yesterday or the day before? I took yesterday off, so my days are mixed up. But, the House finally, they came back into session and they passed the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act without a single Republican vote. Now, I'm old enough to remember, and you don't have to be that old to remember, that the Senate used to, you know, just re-up it every however many years. I mean, it used to pass unanimously. And now you have Republicans not wanting to, you know, give the Voting Rights Act a renewal. What does this tell you? I mean, I know what it tells me, but I'm wondering what message you think it sends.
It sends the message that the GOP and the Republicans want to make it harder for you to vote, harder for you to get a ballot, and harder for that ballot to be counted, because they know when the districts are fair and when the process is fair, hands down, we're going to send people to Washington, D.C. that are going to prioritize putting people first. And, you know, that's not everyone on both sides, but it's certainly what you're going to find in me. I am a hardworking Democrat. I call myself a dirt world Democrat. And having grown up in poverty and had to navigate discrimination, workplace harassment, and not having equal pay for equal work, as we're honoring 101 years that women have been able to vote in this country, we really need to fight for equity.
That is true. Hey, you know what? I'd like
to have to have access to the ballot.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I have up here, if you want to air it, we've got your kickoff video, your campaign video. So why don't we play that so people can get a little more, you know, idea of who you are and what your campaign is about. Hold on, I'm trying to get it on the entire screen so I can bring it over and play it. All right, this is Erica Smith for U.S.
Life hasn't always been easy for me. My father was in the Air Force, and I was born at Fort Bragg Army Base. My mom raised the six of us, and we grew up picking cucumbers and corn on the family farm. I don't come from wealth. I come from hard work. Farming was difficult, and so was growing up black in the South. I know what it means to struggle, to fight the kind of fights that so many families across North Carolina are fighting today, against eviction, against poverty, against crippling medical bills, against floods and storms that are claiming lives and livelihoods across the state. But who's really on the other side of that fight? How many of these politicians have ever wanted for anything in their lives?
I'm Erica Smith. I'm an engineer, educator, minister, and three-term state senator. I understand the dignity of work, the value of faith, and the importance of serving our communities. We've seen the cost of a morally bankrupt system that fails to represent us.
We've seen what happens when North Carolina Democrats don't nominate candidates who reflect the experiences or the diversity of our state. We need something different because our survival depends on it. That's why I'm running for the United States Senate, because I believe it's past time for government to work for all of us instead of just the wealthy and the well-connected. I'm not taking a dime from corporations, their PACs, or fossil fuel companies, because those guys already have enough servants in D.C.
We have a government that grants billionaires tax cuts, yet fails to ensure workers a living wage. But it doesn't have to be like this. We can strengthen unions and raise wages to create a 21st century middle class. We can create a healthcare system that at long last prioritizes people over profits and puts an end to the days when a family goes bankrupt because someone got sick. We can and we must choose workers over big oil and combat the climate crisis by creating millions of new jobs in the energy system of the future. We can build a different North Carolina. One that loves us back the same way we love it. One where it doesn't matter whether you're white, black, or brown. Whether you were born in the rural West, the rural East, or any of the towns and cities in between. One where everyone can live with dignity and retire with it too. We are building a North Carolina where our God-given potential will be enhanced by a system meant to lift us up and not squandered by one meant to hold us down. A North Carolina that works for all of us.
Erica Smith.
Join us, and together we can transform this state and change the world.
There you go. ErikaForUS.com is where you can get the website. That's the website. And Erica, your Twitter is at ErikaForUSSEN, right? I think. Hello? Oh, Erica, your mic is muted. We need to unmute your mic. Okay. I know, Howie, I figured out how to mute you midway through that video, but Erica, you're back with us. So ErikaForUS.com is the website.
Or for us.
ErikaForUS.com. Well, and US as well.
Yeah. Yep. Both. Erica for us, Erica for US. And Erica, I have a question, something that I've been wondering about. When you're going through these 100 counties in 100 days and you're in these very Republican areas and speaking to people, what are they interested in? What is it that they want to hear about? I mean, I know you're running on a very populist kind of program, and do you make an impression on these people? Is it something that you say that gets to them?
Erica? Okay, Erica, we're not hearing you for some reason. Nope. You know what? Can you turn off that background so we're not hearing you. Erica, we're having audio issues. All right, and we just lost Erica there. Maybe she's going to come back in. Sorry about that, Howie. So Howie Klein is still with us. Hopefully, Erica is going to make another attempt to get back in. I guess I shouldn't have played that video because it seemed to have screwed everything up. But Howie, you're still here, yes?
I am here.
You're here. All right. I know Erica's in her car, so I guess she's got a spotty connection. And then she was putting up like a background so we didn't see her sitting in her car. And I don't know if that took some of the bandwidth or what. But now she lost the connection entirely. So hopefully she'll come back.
I don't know where she is in her car, but like I said, she lives in a very rural part of North Carolina. And when people talk about broadband for rural areas, it means something. I mean, this is the kind of thing that happens when you don't have rural broadband.
That's right. So while we're waiting, and hopefully she'll come back, Howie, like I said, I took yesterday off. I actually took a day off in the middle of the week just to hang out with my kid. So I didn't see a lot of what went on. But, there was a lot of power struggles in the House over they came back into session Monday to pass the budget resolution on Tuesday. And what's the deal with Josh Gottheimer and Stephanie Murphy from Florida joined in, turning the 9 conservadems into 10? And would you say something about the media calling them moderates? Those people are not moderates.
No, it drives me crazy.
I'm too.
Always like, and the media does the same thing on the Republican side. They call these, very right-wing Republicans moderates. Well, as you just mentioned, was there one Republican? We know the answer to this, but there was not one Republican who voted for the John Lewis.
Not one. Voting Rights
John
Advancement
Lewis Voting Act.
Act. Yep.
And yet the media says, well, the moderate Republicans didn't vote for it. Well, how is that moderate? How is not voting to empower people to vote? How is that a moderate position?
That is the wrong word.
How they come up with this idea of moderate,
right,
to describe people who are very, very, very conservative. And, the problem for me with this and why I'm always going nuts about it is because moderate is the most liked term by Americans. The American public loves the word moderate. And the media, the corporate media, uses the word moderate to describe all these arch conservatives like Josh Gottheimer, for example.
Yeah.
And then what does that make normal Democrats? Communists or radicals,
right,
or extremists? I mean, what's the opposite of moderate? It's not an innocent thing, and it drives me nuts when people on our side repeat it.
Do it.
And just don't think about it, and they call them moderates.
Yeah, you know, I write this newscast every morning. I come in here and I read a bunch of different sources, and I pull together what I think are the right stories to put in this 6-minute newscast that runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network. And that I podcast is What's News, a longer version. And every single one of them refers to people, if it's in the Democratic Party, they are the conservadems, as you put it, Howie, the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. They call them moderates. On the right, it's the people who might, you know, buck the traditional, you know, conservatives, the right wingers, the not moderates. Lisa Murkowski, right?
You know, there's the fascist part of the Republican Party, and then there's the conservative part.
Right.
There is no moderate part.
No, there is no moderate part.
Republicans. But if you go by the way they vote on issues, there are none.
I agree.
You know, I mean, some of them want to say, well, look, he voted for Trump's impeachment. You know, he's one of the, you know, you could count them on your finger. But does that make someone a moderate
right.
when they're voting constantly on extreme right positions?
Yeah, it just makes no sense. And, you know, more and more since all hell broke loose with the evacuation in Afghanistan, I'm really seeing through a lot of the corporate media, which I already you know, knew about, but my goodness,
including
MSNBC, I give great credit to Lawrence O'Donnell. He did a segment the other night before he had Lucas Kuntz on, by the way, and it was excellent. His commentary was spot on. You know, this is war. Wars aren't pretty, and we have not lost a war that ended any easier than this ever. And in fact, if you want to draw parallels with what happened in Vietnam, this is a whole lot smoother than that was, but we're not seeing the same kind of criticisms then as we are now. I mean, it's just so obvious.
You know, I haven't been a big Lawrence O'Donnell fan.
Nor have
years.
I, but this
There's
was
one
good.
Thing I can say about him, and that is that he has a memory.
Yeah.
Unlike so many of these news people who don't remember anything beyond yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He remembers what happened in Vietnam. He puts things in his historical context, and that's why he's valuable. And that's why sometimes I listen to him,
yep.
as I did on that particular show when he had
Lucas. Yeah.
Kunson.
Yeah. In fact, earlier that day, I happened to watch Mehdi Hasan over on the Peacock Network because, frankly, at 7 o'clock, I can't watch Joy Reid and, you know, CNN, I'm just over. So I'm watching Mehdi Hasan, and he has Lucas Kunson as well. And he also.
Well, Mehdi's one of the best.
He really is.
I don't get that network. I don't even know where it is on the dial.
It's not on the dial.
I watch him on YouTube.
It's a streaming thing. It's only streaming, so you can't get it on the TV. But he's very good, and he does, you know, he does that show on Sunday nights on MSNBC. So, anyway, there's that. Did you know that today was Women's Equality Day?
I did know that. I noticed that some of the women members of Congress. Texted it out.
Uh-huh.
And I also noticed some Republican was, you know, decided to respond to it by screaming about how we're abandoning the women of Afghanistan.
Oh, God.
I mean, the Republicans are using every opportunity to attack Biden
yeah.
about Afghanistan, and it's just absolutely sickening. I mean, what they're doing is sickening, and unfortunately, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I agree. It does. And it's just, it's, you know, you mentioned Lawrence O'Donnell has a memory. Much of America does not. And it seems like they didn't learn anything in school either, because I'm amazed at how stupid at least half of this country is. It blows my mind
yep.
every day.
It would
every
be nice
day.
If it would be the lower half, for the 49% instead of the 51%.
Right.
By the way, has Erica come back on?
She has not. So I think we lost her, and we're at the end of the hour. So Erica has not come back on. Let's push people. Her website is ericaforus.com. So go to the website, sign up, see what she's about, because like most progressives, she actually lists, you know, she lays out where she stands on the issues on her website. What a concept. She's also on Twitter at Erica for USSEN, us sen. So you can follow her on Twitter as well.
Yeah, and please do remember, $1 equals one door. So donate to her at that website as well.
Got it. All right, Howie Klein. Always a pleasure, sir.
See you next week.
All right, thank you. Bye. And there you have it. There's Howie. We're done for today. This has been a weird day, huh? Well, you know what? When something happens like it did in Afghanistan, it's a weird day. It's not a good day. All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. I will be back tomorrow. Not sure what we're doing tomorrow yet, but something. Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. I will leave you, because we can, with today's What's News. All right? So here we go. Take it away, Nicole.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We begin today with breaking news. Reports of an explosion outside of the Kabul airport. After U.S. diplomats there continued warning American citizens to immediately leave the gates around the airport because of what one U.S. official called a, quote, very specific threat stream from a branch of ISIS, the airport was indeed hit. A Pentagon spokesman said that two explosions near the airport's Abbey Gate resulted in both U.S. and civilian deaths. Authorities now say about 1,500 American citizens remain in Afghanistan, and the U.S. government is working to evacuate everyone seeking to leave before the August 31st deadline for the withdrawal of U.S. troops. So far, we're told, more than 4,500 U.S. citizens had been flown out of Afghanistan. U.S. and allied planes flew 19,200 people out of Kabul in the last day alone, and more than 10,000 others were at the airport awaiting flights. European leaders warned that the airport was no longer safe. A British official said there had been, quote, very, very credible reports of an imminent attack there, possibly within hours, and now we saw that it has happened. As of Thursday morning, the White House says that since the end of July, we have relocated approximately 101,300 people. While the media is busy pointing fingers and placing blame, let me throw this out there. Donald Trump's former aide, Stephen Miller, spent 4 years pushing restrictive immigration policies, and he was instrumental in slowing down the processing of special immigrant visas for those Afghan interpreters, embassy staff, and the others who are now top targets for Taliban retaliation. So if you want to place blame, start there. Now, Nancy Pelosi and other members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are criticizing two congressmen, Peter Mayer of Michigan and Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, for making a secret trip to Afghanistan. They claim it was to observe the chaotic evacuation effort that followed the Taliban's takeover of the country and provide oversight. What? Pelosi said she found out about the trip on Tuesday, but didn't say anything to avoid endangering their safety. But she did say, quote, "This is deadly serious." House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy told Fox News that the trip, quote, "put people in jeopardy," though he said he understood why they went. One thing that I'm not seeing mentioned in the media reports is that when they returned, both the Republican mayor and the Democrat, Moulton, said that the trip had changed their minds, and both now agreed with the Biden administration that they should stick to the August 31st deadline. In an interview with the New York Times, Moulton said, quote, "Almost every veteran in Congress wants to extend the deadline, including us, and our opinion on that was changed on the ground because we started the evacuation so late. There's no way we can get everyone out even by September 11th, so we need to have a working relationship with the Taliban after our departure, and the only way to achieve that is to leave by August 31st. Moving on, Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Wednesday issued an executive order banning COVID-19 vaccine mandates, regardless of a vaccine's FDA approval status. This new executive order came the day after the Pfizer vaccine received full FDA approval. Just amazing. In other news, the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol made some broad requests for federal agency records on Wednesday. The chair, Congressman Benny Thompson, sent letters demanding materials pertaining to the insurrection and to Trump's attempts to reverse his election loss to President Biden. Thompson demanded that agencies hand over documents covering such matters as
the former president's knowledge of the election results and what he communicated to the American people about the election. The requests cover communications related to the former guy's family members and any communications between Trump or his allies and, quote, any DOJ official in the days right before and after January 6th. Of course, Trump is reacting by saying executive privilege. So much for the most transparent president in history. One question is, who's representing Trump as he tries to block the investigation? It can't be any of his former lawyers because a federal judge ordered sanctions against Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood, and seven other pro-Trump lawyers trying to overturn Michigan's 2020 presidential election results, saying they engaged in, quote, a historic and profound abuse of the judicial process. U.S. District Judge Linda Parker said the lawsuit, quote, was never about fraud. It was about undermining the people's faith in our democracy and debasing the judicial process to do so. She said sanctions against the lawyers who tried to reverse the former guy's election loss were necessary to, quote, deter the filing of future frivolous lawsuits designed primarily to spread the narrative that our election processes are rigged and our democratic institutions cannot be trusted. Good point. Parker, who dismissed the Michigan lawsuit in December, ordered the lawyers to attend ethics classes. Now, regarding that plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, a 25-year-old Michigan man, Ty Garbin, who admitted he was part of it, was sentenced on Wednesday to 75 months in prison and fined $2,500. More than a dozen men have already been accused of participating in that plot. Government lawyers said the plotters discussed attacking legislatures at the Michigan State Capitol before shifting to the kidnapping plan. Garbin is the only person to have pleaded guilty to the case, and prosecutors say he's cooperated extensively. Well, this weekend, 58 years after Martin Luther King Jr.'s historic I Have a Dream speech, his son, Martin III, will help lead one of two big voting rights marches in Washington. On Saturday, tens of thousands of protesters are expected to attend the dual events on the National Mall despite the ongoing pandemic. They're demanding Congress pass new voting rights legislation. And finally, if it's Thursday, August 26th, it's Women's Equality Day. Congress designated it as such in 1973 after it was introduced in 1971 by then Congresswoman Bella Abzug of New York. So the date, August 26th, was selected to commemorate the 1920 certification of the 19th Amendment, which finally granted women the right to vote. This was the culmination of a massive, peaceful civil rights movement by women that began in 1948 at the world's first women's rights convention in Seneca Falls, New York. The only problem with Women's Equality Day? We still don't have an Equal Rights Amendment. Just saying. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.